Hello and welcome to the Curious Expression podcast. I'm your host, Pinder Singh. Curious Expression is where interesting guests share their knowledge and expertise with the world. In this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Michelle Hoffman. She is a relationship coach, international best-selling author, and the founder and program producer of The Art of Relationshiping. Michelle guides you to attract high-quality, relationship-ready people. I hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much, Michelle, for being here. Welcome to the Curious Expression podcast.
So good to be here. I'm excited that we get to share this time together.
Yeah, happy to have you on. So Michelle, for people that don't know who you are and what you're about, can you give us an idea of what you do?
Yes. If you are looking to find the right love in your life, and maybe you haven't ever found love, or you thought you found it, and then you find yourself in a relationship with the same challenges going on, or you are on the heels of heartbreak, or you've lost love, like myself, I, Michelle Hoffman, am your relationship coach who will help you redefine what love means to you and help attract it right to you, because life is better with good love in it.
And was there a certain moment in your life, like what made you kind of want to go down this road of wanting to be like a relationship coach?
Well, this was not something I thought that I would be doing. I didn't even know that was a thing growing up. What I did know growing up is that every year it was a tradition in our family, and you may have had this tradition too, that on your birthday, there would be a cake with candles in it, and your job after the happy birthday song was sung was to close your eyes and make a wish. So do you remember what you wished for when you were a kid?
I guess whatever the latest toy was, maybe.
Yeah, I've heard a pony, all the chocolate I can eat, to be a CSI agent. All I ever wanted was to be in a healthy, happy relationship and to build and love a family together with my partner. Mm-hmm. And it took a little longer than I thought. What I didn't realize was that I was creating a process to find the right person to attract into my life. And when I found him, we were at the wrong dinner table, at the wrong dinner seating on a cruise. And by the end of dinner, he knew that I was the one for him. And It took me a little longer. That night on the dance floor, he kissed me. Mm-hmm. And I did what every man dreams of when he kisses a woman. I laughed. Of course, that's not at all what people think is going to be the response that they're looking for. But he was brazen enough to say, well, what's so funny? And I said, my whole life has changed. My world was going down a path very clear this way, and now it's going toward you. Mm. And that's what every man dreams of when he kisses a woman. And it was, you know, the intention was there, and it was all very easy to line everything up in the way that I help people line up who is the right person for you. And it was a wonderful relationship. It was everything every birthday candle wish could have hoped for and more. And we built a life together. We built a home together. We built a family together. And it wasn't, you know, outrageous. It was perfect for us until he died.
Mm, sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And that left me head of household, sole parent, and you guessed it, single. And I just did not know what to do. Grief is overwhelming. Grief slams your head against the wall, drops you to the kitchen floor. Grief puts its foot on your neck and prevents you from breathing or seeing your future. And it's hard to take a gasp of air, wondering where will my life go now? Because we had planned on sharing it together. So I figured it out. I moved through grief in a way that grief actually helped move me forward. And again, this was the process that I had put together to find you know, a relationship with someone who was ready to be relationship ready and who we partnered with so beautifully. So I put myself through my own process. I did the same for my kids. And a friend of mine who I used to go running with in high school went out for a run, had a heart attack, and died. And I thought, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And then, of course, because you know as much as you know about me, you realize I did know what to do. And so I went to his widow and I said, this is never going to be okay. I'm going to hold your hand and walk this journey with you. Let's project manage this thing. And so I did. And then my community started to say, go help them, go help them, go help them. And I'm like, I need like two jobs right now. What I will do is I will write the guide I did not have. And I did. It became an international bestseller, Life Worth Living, a practical and compassionate guide to navigating widowhood and soul parenting. And what happened was people were reaching out to me from all over the world to help them through it. And I kept saying, no, no, I need a big high-powered job working for someone else. And they were saying, no, no, this is your job. So I was helping widows and widowers rebuild life again after loss. And it didn't take long, and you could have guessed this by now, that what does someone who has lost love want more than anything else? Love. So I found myself helping them to find what we call in the widow world, their chapter two. And when people were seeing this incredible success and joy in that, their friends were reaching out and their communities were reaching out. Can you help me through this? I'm like, well, don't you know how to do that? And evidently, I have a secret sauce that people didn't know. So that's how I became a relationship coach.
And so like, as far as like your client base, so obviously you have like widows that you're helping. Like, can you give us an idea of like the, I guess, the walks of life that you kind of come across in your work?
All different. I was originally targeting people like me because I understood my way of doing things. But when you can put a process together that works for everyone, that's when things really work. So originally a 35 to 85 year old woman, I could help them find love. And I had a client, I wished her a happy birthday. You know where this is going because of what I just said. And she sent me a picture of herself and her boyfriend. And she added, my boyfriend has taken me to Greece. This is us having lunch together, celebrating my birthday. Thank you. I may have died without knowing what true love is. Wow. Thank you for your help. Of course, I work with widows and widowers. This is a club I never want you to have to join. But if you do, I have, you know, an intimate knowledge of what are the developmental stages that we go through before we can rebuild life back, you know, so that we can enter a relationship in a healthy way and attract the right person. But people who were outside of those demographics also reach out to me. So I help people who are on the heels of heartbreak, who have been divorced and they've tried to be in relationships again, but they find themselves hitting the same wall over and over again because they haven't learned how to trust themselves in intimate relationships or navigate obstacles in relationships in a new way. Or someone who's got an anxious attachment style or an avoidant attachment style, and they keep attracting the same type of people who aren't really working for them in the long run. And I've also I also work with people who are non-traditional, I would say. So I've got clients who their choice in partner is not necessarily heterosexual standard. It may be polyamorous. It may be that they are of the same sex or anywhere in between all of that. Handicapped people, people in different parts of the world where they think the culture is so different that they are unmatchable. We can still find and attract the right person when you understand the message that you're sending is going to be correlating to the message that you're receiving from people. So if you send the message that you of who you authentically are, you will invite in the right person who's attracted to authentic you. So that means it's available to everyone. I work with men, I work with women, I work with, you know, gender fluid, because it's not about me. It's about finding the right love for you.
And do you think all this at the core kind of starts with our relationship with ourselves, that inner voice?
You know, I teach the art of relationshiping to high schools and high schoolers. And one of the things that we talk about is relationships. And like you were saying, Pinder, it's the relationship that you have with yourself, your inner voice. And then I learned that some people don't have an inner voice. And if you have one, that seems unimaginable, but they may have inner thoughts or ideas, and it comes in through a different way. So it's really, how do you connect with yourself? It's the relationship you have with food, with money, with your physical self, with your family, parent-child relationship where you're the child, parent-child relationship where you're the parent, or with your kids. Mm-hmm. It's the relationship you have in your community, with your profession, your career, your colleagues, your clients. It's all of it. So the art of relationshiping is an overarching message of who are you in the world and who do you want to become? And what's the impact that you would like to make in this precious life of yours? So absolutely, yes. Is this relevant to the relationship that you have with yourself? Mostly, because it's important that you know who you are, so you know the value that you bring to a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to put a big caveat on this that might surprise you and your listeners. There's this huge push of you need to make sure that you're good with yourself before you can be in a relationship with someone else. And I'm going to put a kibosh on that, because when people wait until they're not, you know, they think, oh, I'm not thin enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not attractive enough, I don't have enough social status, whatever it is, you know, money comes and goes. Mm-hmm. Looks, they kind of just go. Age, it kind of just goes. Life is too short, take it from me. There's no need to wait. And as wonderful as the relationship that you have with yourself may be, you can't have a relationship with someone else until there is someone else in the relationship. And we learn a lot by having relationships with others.
So how about for people that maybe are more on like the shy side, or maybe they're lonely, they're not used to, I guess maybe they don't have a lot of friends, or they don't have a large social circle. What kind of advice do you typically give to those people that are maybe struggling with loneliness and they would like to have these relationships? It's just they have, I guess, maybe inner monologue issues, or they're just not confident.
Yeah. So I was actually just on a conference call with a team of people to try and develop programming right around this, because as I mentioned, I teach the art of relationshiping. This is an epidemic in this day and age. So you are not alone. And there's fear of failure. There's fear of rejection. There's fear of success. And sometimes if we don't have role models, we simply don't know how to go about learning the communication skills and tools to connect in a real and meaningful way, to have relationships in real life. So you bring up a topic that is near and dear to my heart, which is why I started teaching at the high school level. And it's so brilliant and beautiful to see these kids coming into the classroom, and they may have their hoodies up and they may be shut down, and they'll only answer a question if I call on them. And then as we create this, you know, community where they feel safe and they know that they can share their open heart and be vulnerable in a meaningful way, suddenly the hoodie comes off and they show up and sparkling, and they're engaging and playing games and connecting and meeting with their classmates offline. Mm-hmm. But what's happened in the world is that we're consuming content so much that we don't always engage in it in a way where it builds something bigger than ourselves. So, for example, to clarify that even further, in a healthy relationship, or any relationship for that matter, but in a relationship, you maintain your identity and individuality. And when you're engaging in a relationship, you're actually creating a third entity. And in this is the partnership. And it is greater than either one of you as individuals. And together, this is the inside jokes. This is the fun stuff. This is the shared experiences. This is the mystery that you get to go through together. And that's what a relationship is all about. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling shy, yeah, we can hope that somebody has the confidence to, you know, to initiate and be the first person. I am one of those people, but I used to be the shy one. And in middle school, I basically shut down because it just, it was, I mean, middle school is such an awkward time anyway, as we all know.
Yeah.
And we hope that in middle school, you make the attempts and you try, and we might make mistakes, but at least you're out there trying. But I was so shy and so disconnected, and I decided I never wanted this in my life again. So it was, the pain of the problem was great enough for me to take action to resolve that. Mm. And the first day of high school, it was more than I had in me, but I got up the gumption. And I put my hand out to people and extended the arm. And I said, hi, it's nice to meet you. And of course, in high school, that wasn't standard culture or tradition. Yeah. And so they'd look at me kind of awkward and funny, but eventually, you know, tentatively take my hand and shake it. And they would tell me their name, because that's the status. That is the way that, you know, etiquette implies. You told me your name, I'll tell you mine. Mm-hmm. But it took so much out of me to put my hand out and go, hi, my name is Michelle, that I blanked out at that point. Mm-hmm. And now, okay, so maybe that would have been fine, except 5 minutes later, I did it again. Hi, my name is Michelle. Oh my God, it's social demise right there. Mm-hmm. They'd say, we met 5 minutes ago. And then I had to come up with something to recover. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I forgot your name. It's important for me to remember your name. Please tell me your name again. Oh, it was rough. Mm-hmm. But I did eventually get to know who the people were in my high school who were going to be my tribe, my people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was hard. And yeah, it was worth it. So, somebody needs to make that first leap. And if you're in an environment where somebody like me can facilitate, then that makes it easier. But there's a cycle that I teach my students to follow. And that is first to identify somebody who might be a good prospect or a candidate who might make a good friend. And we can start there. So then what do you do? I'll ask you, Pinder, if you see someone who might make a good friend for you, And again, what constitutes a good friend? Somebody who's about at the same point in something that you have in common, who might want to share some experience going forward in life, maybe has similar value systems, or you have something in common with them, like faith, family, finance, fitness, physical, culture, intellect, philosophical, any frequency, any of those things. A really simple way is to say, "Hi, my name is Pinder. What's yours?" And then, so these are the moments of truth. So first, instead of just coming up and asking a question abruptly, you know, introduce yourself a little bit. You had me introduce myself to you and your listeners here. So that's something you already know, which is why I've chosen that, by the way. The next thing is to find common ground. Anything at all. Hey, we are both in the same class in science class or whatever it is. Now you have found something in common. And one of the things that I teach my students is not only to see what we have in common together, which is a shared experience, but also that it is okay not to be usurped by someone else and overwhelmed, because that is also a fear for people, that it's so hard to fit in that it takes all of their energy. So I think it's also important to know that it's acceptable once you fit into the group in some way to stand out in your own unique identity. So, hey, we're in the same science class. I'm taking this class because I want to be a science major. What's your interest in it? So then you're getting to know someone in a meaningful way. These are the touch points, asking open-ended questions that help you understand that person's value system is, oh, so precious. That kind of valuable information will give you insight into whether you want to invite this person closer into your life or if you want to keep them at a specific distance. If their answer is, oh, I'm only taking science class just to get through this particular general ed, and you're all into science, then maybe they'll be good for this class. They might be a great study partner or to go to lunch or whatever, but they may not be an enduring person overall unless you find more things in common with them. Mm-hmm. See where we're going with that?
Yeah. I like that you mentioned taking that first risk. I feel like that's true, not just in making relationships, but pretty much anything, especially if you're just starting out. Like, for example, like if you're just starting out playing volleyball, right? You have to be willing to kind of be the fool for a little while. You know, you're hitting the ball wrong. You don't know the rules, right? And then slowly you kind of start learning the rules, how to hit the ball properly and all that stuff. So I think in the same way, that's how it works in relationships too, is like you said, you have to be willing to kind of just put yourself out there. You might do it wrong a first couple of times, but eventually you'll get the hang of it.
That's it. You've got it right on the nose. Because as I was saying, to be in a relationship with someone else, you need to have someone else in the relationship. And just like we alluded to on how hard junior high is for people, because there's so many other stresses in life going on, we always have stresses in life. But in reality, if you go out and make the initiative and connect with people and figure out where they fit in what I call the relationship cycle and the spiral, maybe it's someone you just know casually because you see them on the bus on a regular basis, or it's somebody who is really going to be your best friend, then you invite them in closer on that relationship spiral. But if you don't have a relationship with someone else and try, then you don't know what works and you don't know what doesn't work. And you don't know what will work for you. What do you like in a friendship? What do you like in an intimate relationship? What are you really looking for in a partnership of any kind? Mm-hmm. And you learn that through experience of what value people can add to a friendship, a partnership, a relationship.
I agree. And I also like the, you had mentioned this concept of creating this third entity. Because I feel like a lot of times what we get told in relationships, especially for marriage, is that like you're kind of becoming one. And it seems like that's not the right advice, that instead of becoming one, it's really more you're trying to create this third thing. Would you agree with that?
I would. Also, consider where I'm coming from in this. There's no easy way into this life. There's no easy way out. It's really what we know about here is what we have to work with. So there's no reason to lose your own identity and your own individuality and the value that you bring to a partnership. And when you understand that with a partner, it elevates both of you to this, like we're saying, another entity. It's another level. You don't lose yourself when you're part of a healthy relationship. You're still you. You go to sleep at night with your own thoughts. You wake up in the morning with your own thoughts. And when you know that someone's got your back and your best interest in mind and wants you to succeed as much as you want them to succeed, that's what creates a really robust partnership. The power couples, we call them, right? And that's who you want. You want to know that through communication, you're building respect as you continue to connect and know what to anticipate with this partner. And as the communication and the respect grows, so does the trust. It's a fantastic cycle.
Michelle, let's say, you know, I do some self-reflection and, you know, I discover, you know, what I build a good relationship with my inner voice and I kind of know what I'm looking for. And, you know, I feel like I'm authentic and all that stuff. And I'm ready to get out into the dating world. What do I do with my dating profile?
Here we go. All right. The first thing we're going to do, and you've already started this, is we're going to build a personal profile.
Okay.
That's a little bit different. A personal profile is an understanding of who you are in the world and who you'd like to become. Like, what's the impact you'd like to make in the world? Now, I'm not going to hold you to it, because all kinds of things can change in life. But knowing enough about yourself is a valuable way to highlight and feature what you would like to be attracting the right person to you. Now, I'm going to compare this to something that I think you may understand very easily, because it's a very similar process if you are looking for the right job in the right organization. What are you going to do? You're going to do a little self-evaluation and go, well, here's where my passion lies. Here's where my skills are. And here are the things that an organization or person will pay me to do. Mm-hmm. So it's that intersection. It's that ikigai thing. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So when you know that, and then you can say, well, here's my past experience and here's what I'm looking for and the objectives. Then you're going to go and look for an organization that has a role that might fit that. So that's your personal profile. And then you're going to take a snapshot of that. And that's called your resume, right? That's your CV that you're going to use as your ticket or your marketing piece. But it's really just that. It's a snapshot. That's it. You are so much more than the words on your resume. Now, let's bring it back to how you're going to find the right love for you. Once we have your personal profile in place and you've gone through the Ready to Be Relationship Ready program, so you know who you are in the world, you know who to go to for what, you know who's going to leverage their success for yours, you've got health and wellness, you know how to achieve peak performance. I mean, you've got it going on. Right? We've now built your personal profile. And in that, you have an idea of where you're at in life and what you'd like for the rest of your life. And I call this the lifeline of your relationship arc. So where are you on the lifeline of your relationship arc? Are you looking for a friend to go hang out with or play basketball with? Are you looking for somebody to go on a date with? Are you looking for somebody to have as a roommate or an intimate partner? Are you looking to invite someone in to actually become a partner, an intimate partner, and maybe marry and have as a spouse? Are you looking for somebody to build a family with or launch that family? And are you looking for somebody to be a companion and to grow old with? So developmental processes as well as chronological, where are you on the lifeline of your relationship arc? What would you like for the rest of your life? And we want to find someone who's at a similar intersection. Oftentimes, people will look for someone who they thought they should have 10, 20, 30 years ago. But then they repeat these same patterns over and over again, and they're never quite satisfied. So that's why I put that in as the first thing to look at. The second thing to consider are, what are your value systems? And you make decisions all based on your core values. So when you can figure out even your top five core values, and these would be, you want to try and guess yours? I don't know enough about you to.
God would be probably number one. So my relationship with God.
Yep.
And just for the record, I'm happily married, so I'm answering this as if I was single, I guess.
Okay, good.
Honesty. I appreciate when the person that I'm with is direct, because that way I'm getting feedback and I know, and I don't have to play mind games, basically.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm conservative, so generally I would prefer if my partner is more on the conservative side. Finance needs to be good with their money.
Right. Economic.
Yeah.
Awesome. Those are great. So then once you have an idea of that, then you know how you make decisions. Because when you make decisions, they're going to be in relationship to your relationship with God. You're not going to make a decision outside that value system and be able to resonate with that for very long. You value economic stability. So if you decide to splurge on something, you may have budgeted for it already, but you realize that you're not necessarily going toward your goals. You're going to follow a sparkly object, which is fine, but realize that's what you're doing when you're doing it. If you find somebody who is inauthentic or feels like they aren't representing themselves accurately, you're going to get a sense of that and you're not going to like it. And so that's that honesty. You want someone who's going to be comfortable enough with who they are that they can be authentic, whether, you know, the truth is hard or not. And you want someone who's forthcoming to be able to articulate how they're feeling so they don't put you in a position that you have to be a mind reader. Those are fantastic ones to use. Now, the next step for your listeners would be to go through those lists again and those value systems and consider, what are the core values of someone you'd like to invite into your life? They may not be exactly the same. Now, for you, I think all of them might be. Otherwise, if you're valuing economic stability and somebody is carefree, if you're then have a dual credit, you know, or a bank account, you're going to be acting conservatively and they may be spending like crazy. And that's going to cause a misalignment in your partnership, right?
Yeah.
So many of yours that you would like to invite in are similar. However, that's not always the case. And I use the examples of maybe somebody enjoys being with people who have a sense of humor because they feel too serious. So they may invite humor in. They may value adventure, even if they're not adventurous. So those are the types of examples where, what are your core values and what are the values of someone you would like to invite in closer to you? Then there's the third layer, and you've certainly nailed this. Faith, family, finance, fitness, physical, frequency, culture, intellectual, those kinds of things. Here's where people get it wrong more than any other time. They go to that third level first, and then they just hope that the rest lines up. But more often than not, in fact, we could say if 50% of marriages fail, 50% of the time, they're not putting it in the right order. Or they're expecting someone to be a mind reader, as you were pointing out, whether they wanted to have a family or how valuable faith is to them, those kinds of things. So what we would do is look at your personal profile, put in these three layers, so then you have an idea of who you are and who you're looking to invite into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where things get really juicy. Ready? It's easier to find a needle in a haystack when you have some idea of what your needle looks like.
Mm.
So we're going to go out, and whether you're out in the real world looking to meet people, if you're asking your entire network, let them know you're looking for a friend, a person. Just like when an organization is looking for a new employee, they place an ad. Mm-hmm. Or they let everybody know in the company, if you know anyone who's culturally like you, you're going to know who's going to fit in this organization. So let your network know so that perhaps you can be set up by a friend of a friend or invited to a party where you might meet your person. And once you know who you're looking for, it gets a lot easier to find them. So if you're going to meet them organically, this is how you would do it. And then you need to start the screening process very quickly. And people are like, oh, how is this going to work?
Mm-hmm.
How do I know if they're legally and emotionally available?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, ask. And they'd be like, what if I'm at a party and there's this really hot guy? Oh, I don't know how to approach that guy. Well, you both know the host or the hostess of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go directly and say, you know, hey, so-and-so, how do you know the host or hostess? Are you here? Are you ready? Here it goes. Are you here with your wife or your girlfriend? Oh, No, I don't have a wife or girlfriend. Oh, and it opens the conversation because then they know that you are available and looking. It's not rude. It's part of your screening process so that you're not involved with the wrong people and you have an understanding, is this a potential fit? And if they were your potential fit and you didn't do it, you may have missed Mr. Right right there.
Yeah.
So there's that, or it's totally accepted practice in this day and age to go online and reach outside of your network. But here's the caveat, and people get upset about the online dating sites. And in reality, it's just like entering any other large community. There are going to be all kinds of people there. So once you know who you're looking for, clear away the hay from the haystack, find the prospects who could be good potential. Super easy, because you've already got all the tools in your back pocket. If you see somebody who's interesting, go ahead and like them and reach out your hand and say, hi, my name is, and ask an open-ended question that will inform you as to the values of this person. Let's get through this straight away to the good stuff. This is polite because what you're doing in that community is looking for your person. You're looking for the right match for you, depending on whatever it is you are interested in. So start asking open-ended questions about who, you know, what type of partner are you looking for? I see in your profile that you love fishing. Where's your favorite place to go fishing? I don't love all of those big fish photos, but it is a common practice. If that's the only picture you've got, go for it. So, you know, where's your favorite place to go fishing? Or I see that you went to see the Taj Mahal. What have been your favorite adventures you've taken? So you're looking for adventure. Pinder, you were saying your relationship with God is important to you. I would put that out there right away. how do you, you know, what are your favorite traditions and holidays? So, you know, how do you enjoy the holidays? They're going to tell you about their family, how they appreciate their family. They're going to tell you about their culture. They're going to tell you what they value. Mm-hmm. So this is how you can get right to it and find your match really quickly. Then you can up-level that. And I invite people to ask if the person online is willing to demonstrate that they are who they say they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we said, it's a community of people just like any other big city, and there may be people misrepresenting themselves. And if you ask that simple question and they answer, you have cleared that this is a real person, really interested in a real person. If they're put off by the question and they can't prove they are who they say they are, you're not missing out on anyone because they aren't who they say they are. But if you can get through that, maybe you can then up-level that. And of course, you know the next step. It's meeting this person in person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are the challenges there, do you think?
Well, I guess making sure, like, you know, you're making a good first impression, so you're dressed well, making eye contact, you know, following the, I guess, in social norms, if you will.
Yeah, perfect. So here's the deal. All relationships follow the same cycle, from chemistry to casual to connected. So just as you're saying, the two of you have now talked. You understand that this person may have core values in alignment with yours. They're about the same point in their relationship arc as you are. You guys have similar qualities. You can be unique in your own ways. And it looks like you might actually be interested in the same things in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all the things that we were talking about, because you'll understand if they communicate well based on the cadence of the conversation. If somebody's just giving you a short one-word, two-word answer, do not give them the War and Peace biography on yourself. Leave a little mystery, because that's part of the excitement of getting to know one another. Otherwise, they've read your whole story and they can go, mm-hmm. Okay, I've been in that relationship. Let's go to the next one. But if the two of you are now intrigued enough to meet in person, this is when that chemistry really builds up. But there's a big problem that gets in the way. Bum, bum, bum. I call this future casting. So let's say you've decided to meet in a public place, and you know the time, and you know how to get there, and you have told a friend who cares about you where you're going to be and with whom, so to create a safe environment. Do not get in a car with someone you don't know, for example. Meet them in a public place. And now you are getting ready and you're getting dressed and you're all excited. And here's the deal. In your head, we want all of this enthusiasm, but it's also important to realize that your brain is going to fill out a picture so that it's comfortable. For example, if I only show you half my face, your brilliant brain is figuring out kind of what the other half of my face must be looking like. And when I show you, your brain's like, she pretty much looks like I thought she was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a sense of calm going, whew, I knew what to expect. But while you're still in this phase, your brain is filling out the picture. And when you don't know the details of what this person is truly like, your brain's going to put in the details in a way that you would like. But that's you having a relationship with you. So that's why I put that caveat in there, because we want you to have realistic expectations that this is a person, even if they are Prince Charming. It's a person, and we all fart, and we all stink a little sometimes. But we're going to let that stuff go to the wayside, because first, in the chemistry phase of a relationship, when you're showing up like you're intending to meet someone with intention. Make an effort. All right. You ready for a question?
Yeah.
What do you think is the first thing that people look at when they see you? Or what do men look at women when they are deciding if they want to be with them?
I'm not sure. Maybe her physical beauty.
Okay, good. Research shows that the first thing men look at in a woman is their hair.
Okay.
The reason for that is the way that someone cares for their hair is an indicator of not only how they care for themselves, but how they may be able to care for them.
Mm.
So, and if you don't have hair, it's really how you're presenting yourself in such a way. So now you have an idea. So the way you show up absolutely matters, because it's an indicator of how you take care of yourself and how you may be able to take care of them. So potential and capacity. All right. So let's say you have arrived in your location where you're going to meet. The excitement is up. You're looking for your person. And you catch eyes. There's your person. This is the chemistry phase of the relationship. And the chemistry in your body is literally changing. The neurotransmitters of dopamine, which is encouraging you to want more, is going all on fire. They are about who you thought and what you thought they were going to look like, maybe even better. So oxytocin is going crazy, which is the hormone that helps you reach out and connect with people. The serotonin is going crazy. Literally changing your chemistry. When you're in the chemistry phase of a relationship, the rest of the world might get blurry. You might forget your car keys. Oh my gosh, I forgot to put my shoes on. And when you hear the phone ring and you think, oh, that might be my person, you're in the chemistry phase.
Okay.
So very exciting. Some people get stuck and they get high on the chemistry phase and it's hard for them to move on. But there's ways to do that. So let's say through the law of attraction, you've brought closer together. And this is where something really important happens. You're using your senses. You're using sight, taste, touch, sound, smell to gather data about this person. And I think this goes to a much deeper level than our awareness. But with that data that you're bringing in, you're making all kinds of quick decisions based on your previous experience in life. You're making very fast judgments and decisions to know that, one, you're safe. Your amygdala is going to be calmed down when you know this is your person. That's the amygdala is the part of your brain looking for danger. So we want you to be safe, and it could be very exciting. So you can decide what happens next based on pulling that sensory data in. And maybe you hug and you smell her. Oh my God, this is amazing. I can't wait to learn more about you. And let's say you get to know one another. And then you're in the casual phase of the relationship. And in the casual phase, you're going to be spending time together in a way that you can anticipate what might happen next. And this is like going to your favorite restaurant and ordering your favorite meal, because you get an idea of what you're looking for, and you know that that's the experience you want to have again. It might be like listening to your favorite song over and over and over again, because you can anticipate what's going to happen or what it's going to be like. So in the casual phase, we can start to anticipate what the experience is going to be like with this person. There's something else that happens in the casual phase of a relationship. This is where the flags come in. And if it's a yellow flag, I encourage you to ask an open-ended question to clarify. Oh, you're already married? I didn't really get that before. And that's going to send the signal that that was a red flag if you're looking for your one-to-one monogamous partner. And that's your signal to distance yourself from this person. And then the yellow flag, oh, you're actually legally divorced and you are ready to have, you know, to start a new relationship, okay, that would be a yellow flag going to a green light, go. And that's the commitment phase. And the commitment phase is like a handshake agreement that throws you forward because you're both agreeing that you're going on to the next level or the next spiral up of chemistry to casual to committed. And then let's say things go well and you get that first kiss. That's going to throw chemistry all crazy good. And then once you've been seeing one another for a while, you can anticipate what that precious and lovely, endearing, intimate kiss is going to be like, which is equally satisfying. And it's that commitment agreement that this is good. And now we're boyfriend and girlfriend, for example. Then through communication, respect, and trust, that's how you, through shared experiences, up-level that relationship. There you go.
Long process, but it's worth it.
Oh, God, it's so worth it. And here's the thing. It's impossible to jump in to a relationship in the committed stage. You could be in an arranged marriage, and it's still going to be chemistry casual to committed. Maybe your families have done all the background work so that they've lined up where you are on the relationship cycle and what you'd like in life, your core values, and all the other things. But if you're in an arranged marriage, you're still so excited about meeting at the altar and the veil goes up and this is my person. And you still go through those shared experiences to up-level the relationship. You're just starting with a very strong intention. So you can't jump. You can't jump ahead. And in reality, we don't want to.
Yeah, take it slow and easy.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like ice cream. You don't want to eat it all at once. You got to enjoy it.
It gets ice cream headache. We do not want that in relationships, but there are plenty of obstacles and hurdles along the way that we do need to understand how to navigate in relationships. Mm-hmm. And this goes to your comment of you want somebody who's not expecting you to be a mind reader and who is forthcoming and honest with you. Because sometimes even when we have to ask hard questions or present difficult material or realities, being able to open those difficult conversations with your partner and have those discussions is the way to normalize those discussions so they're no longer hard to approach or present. Mm-hmm. At the first couple of times, it's like, ooh, how do I say that? Mm-hmm. But if you're honest and forthcoming, it means that those types of topics are standard, easy to approach conversations. And in reality, then you have a partner and it's the two of you together facing life celebrations and challenges.
Mm-hmm. So, Michelle, we've talked a lot about like the positives and you just touched on a little bit about maybe some challenges. So let's maybe talk about when things go wrong and what we should kind of do. So you hear a lot sometimes where somebody gets cheated on, right? And trust is broken. So what's somebody to do when, you know, they went through all the steps, they thought they found Mr. Perfect or Miss Right, whatever, but then something happens like cheating and, you know, things start falling apart. How should somebody respond in those types of situations?
Well, it's really, of course, going to be, you know, this is a should I stay or should I go inquiry. And that's a personal decision. But let's approach this, you know, from the 30,000 foot level. Because what's happening here, and I'll give you a very common example, is one person in that partnership is probably not feeling lovable or they're not feeling like they are enough. And when that person is not lovable and not enough, there's almost nothing this other person can do to prove it to them. Mm. So I've got hand puppets up. For those of you who can't see them, they're my hands. But this happens all the time in relationships. The majority of people in the dating pool, for example, have an avoidant attachment style. And attachment styles, there's no right, there's no wrong, there's no one that's better than another. It's easier to have a secure attachment style, but you can't just go buy one. This is the strategies that we've adapted when we were very young to find homeostasis, to find security, to find safeness. And if someone, one of our caretakers or our tribe members, whatever, left us to, you know, take care of ourselves, for example, the way that we respond to that determines our attachment style. Mm-hmm. So, for example, avoidant attachment style people tend to, and I'll tell you, they are attractive, they're charismatic, they're professionally successful, they're often very good looking. And sometimes they're honing that to reach out and get the attention that they need so that, and there's several different reasons behind this, so that they feel wanted, needed, and loved, because somewhere along the line, they were left to fend for themselves. Mm. And the way that they felt secure with themselves is to create an impermeable, is that the right word? Bubble to protect themselves. And if you can't penetrate who I am, then I am safe. So I was just working with a client today who's definitely this definition. She is attractive. She is successful. And she could have choice of men. What she didn't realize until today is she's not showing any of them who she truly is. Because when she feels like she has to be emotionally vulnerable, she closes off to protect herself, and she turns around to her partners, and if they're an anxious attacher, they might say, what can I say? What can I do to make things better, to let you know that I am here, to the point where they're givers and givers and givers, and she'll say, you are not enough. So these anxious attachers and these avoidant attachers, oh my God, they're self-fulfilling prophecies, and they are attracted to one another, and it is movie moments, fireworks. And then the fireworks fizzle when the avoidant attachment style person says, I am not safe enough to be vulnerable with you. I need to protect myself. I can't trust or rely on other people. I can only rely on myself to take care of me. So they will pull away and create distance, whereas the anxious attacher is going to reach out for them and go, hey, come on, we're partners. I'm here for you. How are we going to make this work? What else can I do? What else can I give? What else can I say? Mm-hmm. And that's going to push the avoidant further and further away. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of counterintuitive, but what this avoidant is saying is, I need to prove I'm lovable, and you are not enough. And then the anxious person says, oh, I'm not enough, proving they are not enough. And then the fireworks fizzle. And it could be a very angry, disparate breakup. Mm. So when chemistry to casual to committed, when we're on different points on that cycle, then we're out of alignment. And we have these different attachment styles that when you know who your partner is, you'll know how to show up for them in a way that they can stay and be safe. Mm. But to your point, if someone's cheating, from my perspective, what I've seen is they are trying to prove they are lovable. And even if they've got a family and kids and a perfect quote unquote life, mm-hmm. they may just explode the whole thing because they are not feeling lovable enough. And then they'll go try and find someone else. Mm-hmm. Oh, can you prove to me that I'm lovable? And you know the secret. They need to know themselves that they are lovable. Mm-hmm. So that follows, how does someone from these either end of the attachment style, how do they deal with this? So either by having a partner who is secure or having a partner who understands them well enough that they know one another, strengths and weaknesses, so that they can be safe in their partnership. Or if you find that as a repeated cycle in your relationships, that's a clear signal to reach out to somebody like me, a relationship coach, to help guide you to a more secure attachment style so that you can have a relationship with someone without feeling like you need to disengage and go prove you're lovable somewhere else. Or if you find that people cheat on you because you're not showing up in a way where they feel like they are enough in the relationship.
So you use the word lovable, and you know, within that is the word love. And so based on like all your knowledge that you have, what exactly, in your opinion, is love? Like, what are we looking for exactly? What is love?
You know, I'm going to give you a very surprising answer to this. Because after hearing so many people describe this, because some people don't even know what love feels like. And I reach back, well, do you have love from a parent? Did you have love from a pet? Did you and a best friend go through so much together that there's an authentic, platonic love? So, you know, when have you felt love? Because that's going to be an indicator of what you're looking for. Mm. And if you, like myself, I know what love is because I've been in love before, even though he passed. So I know what it feels like when I get there. Love is being confident that you can be true to who you truly are. And you feel like you can be yourself with your person and that they love you for who you are. Strengths, weaknesses, all the different aspects and beautiful facets of who you are. Mm-hmm. Love is knowing that someone accepts you unconditionally. Mm. Love feels like cotton candy, I've heard clients say. It's walking on air kind of love, where they feel like a goddess, or one partner feels like they've won the jackpot. They feel viscerally safe, like every cell in their body finally feels like, oh, I'm home. Mm. Knowing that you have created this third entity and that you are safe there. And why I say it might surprise you when I tell you what love feels like is because it was surprising to me when every single person found love, they described it as a sense of calm.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't say, oh, I'm dreaming about being with this person. It's going to be so exciting. And we will go on adventure and have build a family and build a home. And we will be calm. But knowing that you're safe in your partnership is that sense of safety and security that gives you that sense of calm. And I believe that we bring information in through our senses, as we were talking about before. And that's the data. And there are really only 7 things that we need to address in life to find that homeostasis, to find happiness, to find that sense of calm. And if you're waiting for the wind to push you toward happiness, it pushes you toward happiness, great. But if it doesn't, would you blame the wind? No. Mm-hmm. So we hope that when you come into this world and you're looking to find that sense of balance in life in these 7 things, that at some point you can bring yourself to that. Would you like to know what the 7 things are?
Sure.
Are you nourished? Because if you're hungry, it's really hard to learn your math tables. Mm-hmm. Are you overly thirsty? If you are not hydrated and you are dehydrated, it's really hard to think or build relationships or help others. So nourishment, hydration, regulating your body temperature. Simple it sounds, but not always. If it's a challenge, it's a big challenge, and that's what you need to think about first before you can reach out to someone else and be a healthy partner. Okay, food, water, regulating your body temperature. Are you out of pain? If you're in pain, that's going to take all of your attention, brain and body, to remedy that. Do you need stimulation? I'm missing one. Food, water, regulating body temperature. Rest. When you don't have enough sleep, it's almost impossible to get through the day or think through what's going to happen next. And then stimulation and love, building community and partnership and relationships. Those are all the things that we want to have in balance, and that if they're out of balance, we will do anything to get them back into that calm, into that balanced mode. And we hope that at some point, you know, with our children, we help them regulate that. And then we hope that they can learn to regulate it themselves and then help others. And that's love.
Hi, Michelle. Before I let you go, my last question for you. What advice would you have for young individuals that are interested in pursuing the same kind of work that you do?
Oh, so they want to be relationship coaches?
Yeah.
All right. Good question. Well, one, I think that understanding yourself and having relationships with people, seeing the observations, seeing the patterns, making sure that you don't absorb other people's situations so that you can separate yourself to be a helpful support. Who else wants to be a relationship coach? If any of you want to be a relationship coach, I need you on my team because we are building a very huge platform. So please reach out to me at The Art of Relationshiping. It's understanding who you are in relationship to the people you are helping. And you can certainly get all kinds of accreditations and academics and certifications, or you could spend a lifetime working on it, like I have, in addition to all of those things. Because helping people with relationships means being authentic and seeing the whole picture in a way that you can help other people have that third entity of a relationship, even when you're not part of it.
Michelle, before I let you go, where can people connect with you online?
TheArtOfRelationshiping.com. And if you go to TheArtOfRelationshiping.com, there's plenty of free resources right on the resource page where you can find the secrets of happiness and how to get there. You can find all the things you know to develop an online profile that really works, including the images that send the right vibe. And if you'd like to set up a strategy call with me, go to theartofrelationshiping.com and click Speak with Michelle and put some time on my calendar, because I'm looking forward to finding out how I can help you uplevel all the relationships in your life.
All right, great stuff. Thank you so much, Michelle, for being on the Curious Expression podcast. I had a great time talking with you. Loved all the love advice that you've shared. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Life is better with good love in it, so go enjoy it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Curious Expression podcast. Hit that subscribe button now to ensure that you don't miss out on any future guests.